Chapter 22 Betrothal. For the Shalane, the summer, warm and dry, dragged by on lazy, broken legs. Feast after reception, after meeting, after presentation, demanded her attendance, and Shirtan attended every one with her, drunk as often as sober. He jumped at any opportunity to receive the doting and worshipful attentions of his followers, while conveniently turning dumb at the mention of any real work to be done or decisions to be made. To be sure, Shirtan was a skilled and charismatic celebrant, and for all his moaning about Jen's lack of station, he spent almost every night in the poorer quarters of town among common folk, revelling in their adoration and attention. One day, the Shalane and Fenner decided to use the walls to watch him on one of the rare occasions a meeting didn't require his presence. Everywhere Shirtan went, Dayson trudging unhappily behind, the people thronged him. He loved it and played to their enthusiasm. But soon the Shalane had to will the walls to fade. Shirtan was not a moral man. Three of the noble-born daughters of Rugoth had joined his harem of concubines since his arrival, raising his tally to 17. Between the meetings and his carousal in the town, the Shalane wondered if he ever had time to visit them. She hoped he didn't. At first, she tried to talk to him, attempting to develop at least a rough politeness between them, if not a formal relationship, but a few days decided her against it, and she gave up addressing him altogether if she could help it. For one, she didn't like it. Jaren didn't either, and the Shalane found Jaren's hand on his blade hilt, fingers white-knuckled on more than one occasion. If the Blessed One were to ask Fenner to join his harem, the Shalane thought she might use his sword herself. She wondered if Shirtan would still be alive if Jen were her day protector. At the worst, Jen would raise another challenge, and Shirtan would send Dayson to his death at Jen's hand. And seeing Dayson still hurt her. He was miserable, always wearing a face full of pathetic resignation, and he would no longer meet her eye. Better than anyone, he knew Shirtan's character. The Shalane fancied that Dayson felt badly for her, and wished he could make amends for failing to stand with Jen for her honour. Of course, all she could do was fancy and guess at his feelings. She never spoke with him any more. He was visited by the full consequence of his choice, and she could not rescue him. Ruefully, the Shalane realized she was paying the price for choices she had no hand in making, and the cost continued to mount. She increasingly leaned on Fenner and her mother to fend off her darker moods. Though not typically in Fenner's character, the young handmaiden perversely chose to throw her energies into winning over the quiet protector just because it was harder, rather than be content with the ready attention and affection available from Kimdan. She claimed she could see a great depth in Jen, despite his reluctance to share much about himself. The Shalane saw no depth. Jen emanated power, but otherwise he was single-minded and empty to her view, especially in contrast to Dayson's lively, colourful personality. Nothing convinced her more powerfully of this than the testing day for the Dark Guard's apprentices. The testing allowed the Dark Guard to measure the skill of each apprentice so they could tailor their training to each one's strengths and weaknesses. Rather than test the apprentices themselves as they normally would, the Dark Guard invited Jen to do it for them, while they watched and judged. The Shalane suspected they did it out of curiosity about Jen, as much as any real need to better their evaluation of the young men. She and Fenner went to watch, Shirtan blighting them with his presence, although having Dayson nearby nearly redeemed the occasion. The first part of the day consisted of Jen going after each of the apprentices, using different styles of fighting. Some Dayson and Jaren admitted they had never seen. Kimdan expectedly fared the best, but faltered as Jen did combinations of exotic, unorthodox moves. It ended with Jen punching the regent's son solidly in the face and giving him a black eye. Kimdan, furious, tried to avenge himself immediately, but Captain Tolbrook pulled him back and sternly lectured him for his absence of control. The scene was then reversed, each apprentice attacking Jen with every slash, swing, and thrust in his arsenal. Jen barely needed to move, even for Kimdan's ebullient assault. Blessedly, the whole spectacle was so engrossing that Shirtan uttered far fewer unsavory comments than usual. The Shalane could sense that Jen scared him like no one else ever had. He showed his fear by disparaging Jen when he could, though Jen gave little material for him to work with other than his low station and dull personality. After the midday meal, they returned to a special treat the Dark Guard had planned. In a loud voice, Captain Tolbrook announced to the apprentices that they were to rush Jen as a group, Kimdan in command. Any apprentice who scored a mark on Jen would earn a day off.
"That's not fair," Fenner protested. "Five against one."
"Not fair for them," Jaren informed her. "You'll see, miss." And he was right. Kimdan, not even bothering to pretend to lead his squad, sprinted at Jen madly and attacked, Tolbrook chiding him loudly. Kimdan, however, had nothing at his disposal that Jen couldn't do four times faster and with twice the force, and before the other apprentices even arrived at the melee, Kimdan had fallen in pain. As the Shalane watched Jen dismantle the apprentices, fighting with unparalleled fluidity and ferocity, she felt for the first time that she comprehended him. Jen was a tool, good for one thing and useless for all others. Her mother and Fenner might see more, but Jen was pure sword fighter. While courage and loyalty were his allies, personality and charm were superfluous to his purpose. The fight ended rather sooner than the Dark Guard probably expected, though by their smiles they thought it rousing fun anyway. Kimdan managed to pick himself up to renew his advance, only to have Jen smack him down doubly hard. The rest of the apprentices fared the same, though the Shalane thought Jen laid off Volney and Gerund a bit. No one got a day off. The Dark Guard availed themselves of the Shalane's healing talent to mend their charges' broken fingers, collarbones, ribs, and many deep bruises. Jen stood on the field at attention, unmarked and unmoving, until Tolbrook gave him leave to go. Perhaps Jen's impressive performance in the contest, or Kimdan's ungentlemanly fuming afterward, was what turned Fenner's romantic purposes entirely toward the former. Unfortunately for all, the succeeding month's brutal schedule provided little opportunity for casual time among friends. The Shalane even heard her mother mention that she regretted not having an opportunity to sit down at a proper meal with Jen. While the first few weeks of Jen's appointment saw him the topic of much conversation, his night post and limited appearances in public eventually let him fade into the background. His name surfaced once, briefly. His clue about the fires had helped the city guard turn up evidence of the Faunergy in some woods outside of the city. They started to patrol them regularly, and during the whole summer no other explosions or fires occurred, though no one was apprehended for the deeds. In place of fires, horrible messages scrawled in some animal's blood were found on walls within the damned quarter. Each threatened the Shalane's death in some new way. This curtailed her trips outside the castle walls, and though Shatan was given warning, he didn't heed it, continuing his nightly revelries whenever and wherever he pleased. The betrothal loomed closer with each setting of the sun, and the Shalane couldn't decide whether she wanted it to come quickly or not. On the one hand, she wanted it over. On the other, she would be betrothed to the most repugnant man she'd ever had the misfortune of knowing. Since betrothed she must be, she settled on wanting it to come quickly. In her mind, she held a secret hope that Chertan would change, that the eventual weight of his responsibilities would sober him, both in mind and body, and unshackle an imprisoned nobility. She hoped that when he saw her unveiled, he would dismiss the concubines as inadequate and find a real affection for her that transcended his physical desire. The more she thought, and the closer the betrothal, the more her sorrow eroded all handholds of hope. She rarely cared to leave her room or even get dressed, finding every entertainment empty of enjoyment. With 2 weeks left before the blessed day, as everyone else called it, she found it hard to sleep, the frightening double dream plaguing her over and over again as if to compel her to some choice or belief. But still she couldn't fathom what it meant, and in those sleepless nights she finally found the time and will to read the book Shatan had hurled at Jen to wake him in the library so many weeks before. His Master's Secret Law. And after the first few chapters she had difficulty setting it aside, though she found the story unsettling in the extreme. The story, written by one Sarvain Obelan, told of a servant of an apparently upright and pious lord. The lord kept up appearances of goodness to everyone, his wife, his children, his peers, his pure man, to everyone but his servant. The servant, a wretched, sick man low in the ranks of nobility, oddly commanded his lord's trust because he seemed so inconsequential to everyone. But his lord took him everywhere, on the trips that he told his family were to care for certain merchant dealings of his that were, rather, trips of riotous pleasure in far countries. The servant was present as the lord lied, cheated, and philandered. But in his own country and in his own house, all believed the lord good, none suspecting in the least the man's secret law, his own way of living different than the life he professed to everyone else. When his lord went to bed, the servant nearly blinded himself in the dim candlelight to record every name, every drink, every coin, and every word. As time wore on, some close to the family found evidence of his lord's other life and questioned the servant threateningly about it, but he would say nothing, ever faithful, ever silent, even in the face of irrefutable evidence. When the master died, the family asked the servant to perform a eulogy for the master he'd long served. In the last chapter of the book, he gave it, long, honest, and damning, naming every bastard that could lay claim on his estate, every man the lord had cheated and owed, every debt he had run up, gambling and drinking. The effect of the servant's careful record-keeping was the ruin of his lord's estate, his wife and children impoverished and left beggars. The servant killed himself by poison afterward, joining his master in death. When the Shalane finished the book, she felt perplexed. Why had Jen lauded the book so highly? Merely to irritate Shatan? For herself she could not recommend it. It left her depressed and upset, though she couldn't decide which bothered her worse, the lord's fraud or the servant's final act of betrayal, an act which hurt the innocent family rather than the one who deserved the punishment. The Shalane had hoped the charming wife and children would escape the devastating knowledge of their husband's and father's depravity. But unlike most stories she liked to read, the ending to this story set her to serious thinking, rather than pleasant dreaming. She returned the book to the library next morning, but the story so possessed her that she turned it over in her mind all day, trying to guess at what it might mean and why Jen apparently thought so highly of it. She had assumed that Jen read books about fighting and war, but this book hadn't one sword stroke in it, and was certainly meant to discomfort the reader. For the first time she could remember, she itched for Jen to come on duty, bursting with questions for him. So anxious was she that when he did emerge from the maze and dismiss Jaren, she didn't think to greet him properly, instead letting the questions run out all on top of each other. "Why do you like that book? I could hardly make sense of it. What is Oberland trying to say with such an awful ending? I suppose it's supposed to be symbolic of something or teach something, and I've had some ideas. What do you think?"
"I suppose you're talking about his master's secret law?" Jen asked, calm tone a counterpoint to her own babbling.
"Yes," she said, settling herself.
"Which question do you want me to answer first?"
"The first."
"Why do I like it? One reason is that it was one of the first books my master had me read, once I learned to read well. He assigned me to read it to teach me an early lesson. The lesson itself is the other reason I cherish it."
"What is the lesson?"
the Shalane asked, wondering why Shadan Cairn would have his student read such a book.
"I will do what my master did to me, and reverse the question. What do you think it means?"
"I admit that I've thought a great deal on it today, and I keep thinking back to Shatan that day in the library. I see him as the lord of the story, and Dacen as the servant who follows him around silently everywhere. I suppose I thought you were saying to Shatan that Dacen would reveal his secrets one day to his detriment. But now that I say it, it sounds rather inadequate for an explanation."
"If that's what it means to you, then that's a good enough lesson,
but not the right lesson.
Oberland did not leave behind anything explaining what he wanted learned from the story. For all we know, he wasn't trying to teach anything at all."
"But there is something to be learned, or it wouldn't bother me so much,"
the Shalane pressed, feeling exasperated.
"What was the lesson your master wanted you to learn from it? Surely he told you something."
"Yes, he did."
"Then what?"
The Shalane would swear he was teasing her.
"I will tell you, Holiness. But I must first explain that I do not see the story as symbolizing Shatan, at least not in the way you are thinking. My master taught me that the servant, the lord and his family, are really parts of one person. The servant is the conscience, sickly and silent from his master's abuse, though still faithful. He is always there, recording every deed and misdeed. The family is what is good about a person. The servant's exposition of his lord's deeds at the end merely represents the inevitable time when the curtains over our memories and deeds are thrown aside, and the dark volume of secrets is opened to the light.
Destroying whatever was good about ourselves,
the Shalane said, understanding the tack of Jen's explanation. Or perhaps differently said, degrading what was good to ourselves, or what good we leave behind, by enslaving it to the debt incurred by our dishonourable actions, Jen added.
What is the secret law, then?
Whatever law you invent for yourself, the law you really judge yourself by, the law that makes you feel bad for doing something, not because someone else knows you did it, but because you know it was wrong. Or conversely, the law that lets you feel good about doing things a public law says you shouldn't.
Now you are referring to Shaitan, I think.
I assure you I'm not. The lesson applies to everyone, though some fit my master's explanation of the story more snugly than others.
One more question,
the Shalane continued after thinking for several moments.
Why would Shaitan Cairn have you read such a book? What does all this talk of conscience and law have to do with training someone to be a killer?
I do not consider myself a killer, and I never said the Shaitan had me read it.
He was your master, wasn't he?
In the slave and master sense, yes.
If it wasn't him that had you read it, who was the other master?
The Shalane's curiosity was piqued, and she felt ashamed. She had not thought of the life Jen must have lived before Ogmir invaded his country, but just as Fenner had told her would happen, an immediate wall went up between her and Jen. Perhaps we should talk of it some other time, Holiness. I should concentrate on my duty. These are perilous times, and no doubt the Ilk is working against the betrothal. I beg leave to focus on the task at hand. You should probably enter your chambers, for safety. The Shalane had half a mind to force the matter, but Jen still intimidated her, and she backed down. As the next 2 weeks limped by, the story remained with her, as did her conversation with Jen, which impelled her to rethink her earlier assessment of his nature. The frequency of public appearances in the Great Hall increased steadily, and she spent more time with Shaitan, taking his arm, talking superficially with him, curtsying to him, laughing at his jokes, or at least the ones she could laugh at without offending her conscience. Listening to him and watching him convinced her that he had slit the throat of his conscience servant and buried the body and the record books in the cellar a long time ago. The day of the betrothal finally came, and she rose that morning with a knot in her stomach and a headache that started in her shoulders and throbbed up through her neck and skull. Eldwina, Fenner, and her mother told her over and over again that most women felt nervous on their betrothal day. But the Shalane thought that only some few felt so for the same reasons as she. She had nothing to do for the entire day until the afternoon when she would be primped and dressed for the evening ceremony. They wouldn't allow her outside the Great Hall today until the trip to the chapel, which meant the whole of her entertainments had to be found in either her room, the indoor gardens, or the library. Out of kindness to Fenner, the Shalane agreed to go with her to the library to see if they could encounter Jen, so her handmaiden could work at him a little more. Jaren trailed along behind, face bemused. He was well aware of Fenner's quest for Jen's attention and enjoyed their plotting from a distance. But when they arrived, Jen had already fallen asleep on Jen's couch, as Obart called it, embracing his sword in his usual fashion. The lack of books on the floor showed he had gone straight to sleep rather than reading first, and Fenner was a little disappointed. Two scullery maids skulked around the shelves of books, whispering and giggling, minds on anything but reading. Jaren scowled at them, and they scampered off, leaving the library empty, save for the four of them and Pureman Obard.
Perhaps we should read a little, the Shalane suggested. I need something to take my mind off things.
After getting some recommendations from Obard, they both settled in on the couch opposite Jen, and despite the calm and quiet, the Shalane had difficulty concentrating. If only Shaitan had some redeeming quality she could hang on to. She fancied herself spoiled by years of association with men of quality, only the best, chosen to guard her. She wondered if regular women leading normal lives had many good choices of men, or were forced to accept the hand of men who only sought to please themselves. A quiet groan from Jen ended any pretense at reading altogether. Everyone turned their attention to him, faces concerned and curious. Jen gripped the hilt of his sword so intensely that his knuckles whitened, and on his face smooth calm was replaced with sadness. A tear ran down a jagged line of scars on his cheek, and he calmed, grip relaxing.
"We should wake him,"
the Shalane suggested, feeling pity.
"He's obviously in some nightmare."
Fenner put her book down and walked toward him.
"Don't get too close, Lady Fairdale,"
Jaren warned.
"He is quick with the blade.
Do not startle him from sleep." The Shalane couldn't be sure her handmaiden even heard the suggestion. Her concentration stayed on Jen. Kneeling by him, she placed her hand gently on his, and at her touch, his eyes snapped open and his face went back to its usual expressionless state. He looked at Fenner, then raised his hand to his face to feel the wetness.
"Are you feeling well, Jen?"
Fenner asked softly.
"I think you were dreaming."
Jen pushed himself to a sitting position, concentrating for a moment before standing and buckling his sword belt.
"I'm well, Lady Fairdale. I thank you for your concern."
The Shalane couldn't believe how quickly he could shed emotion.
"I should take my rest in my quarters rather than the library. I'm sorry to have disturbed you. I will see you both this evening.
Shalane, Miss Fairdale, Jaren." He bowed and left quickly. Fenner watched him go, and the Shalane saw frustration dawn on her face.
"He will tell me nothing," she complained quietly. "How can I love such a mystery?"
The Shalane came to her handmaiden and lifted her by the hand, hugging her gently. The Shalane wanted to tell her to forget Jen, to love Kimdan as she always had, and be happy. But she couldn't. Instead, she shared Fenner's curiosity. Jen kept a lot of himself locked away, and the Shalane realized she had judged her quiet protector too harshly, and in the wrong light.
"Don't worry too much, miss," Jaren soothed, oddly affectionate. "We all know Jen suffered much pain at Shadan Cairn's hand in his homeland. The pain is yet too near for him to say much. Time will soften the edge and loosen his tongue. Before you know it, you won't be able to shut him up."
Fenner smiled and wiped her eyes, giving Jaren a thankful hug. The Shalane could see he felt awkward, and she couldn't help but smile. Jaren, a veteran soldier, would have preferred a roomful of Uyumak than the overt gratitude of a young woman. The rest of the day, the Shalane spent walking and conversing with Fenner in the gardens and the hallways. They saw Shatan once, evading him before he noticed their presence. Just seeing him again put the Shalane in poor spirits, and after taking lunch on the balcony in the great hall with her mother, she retired to her chambers and napped before starting preparations for the betrothal. Later, after 2 hours of grooming and dressing, the Shalane willed the walls to show her the courtyard. 2 thick lines of people gathered from the great hall to the chapel with candles and lanterns, forming a broad avenue of light down which she and Shatan would ride on a white horse. It was the first night of autumn, and those gathered bundled themselves in cloaks and hats against the chill. A wind would gust from time to time, blowing leaves from the castle gardens about and extinguishing any flame not protected by some device. In spite of these inconveniences, the people smiled and laughed, festive and anxious. The Shalane wished she could feel the same. While not the formal bond of marriage, the betrothal was as binding as the marriage vow, and her bond to Shatan, her duty, gave her no happiness. Now that the time had come, she barely felt alive, an emotional rigor deadening her spirit. From somewhere, she knew, she would need to call forth the vitality to survive the week of joint feasting and joint appearances that would follow the betrothal, but now, with Shatan waiting, that source of strength was distant and unseen. Fenner's presence comforted her, the young handmaiden humming to herself as she pushed and prodded wayward curls in the Shalane's hair, hair that no one would see because of the all-covering shroud she wore. Fortunately, that same veil would hide the unhappy face that stared back at her when she looked in the mirror.
The betrothal dress was a formless, loose-fitting white gown sewn from a silky material that would do her little good against the cold. For that, a heavier cloak, also bleached white, had been provided for her warmth.
There, Fenner said, putting the brush on the table. All done. Let's get you veiled and wrapped and you'll be ready.
Ready indeed, the Shalane thought, feeling sick. She said nothing as Fenner placed the veil on her head and helped her into the cloak. Her handmaiden often acted oblivious to the fact that she couldn't stand her fiancé, though she was certain Fenner knew better. Looking one last time in the mirror, the Shalane couldn't help but feel like a big snowball. She wheeled the walls off, and the picture of the courtyard faded.
Let's go.
Fenner hugged her, encouraging her, and the Shalane fought off depression as best she could so she would appear resolute and vibrant for the people to whom she was an example. It would be difficult to fool anyone who knew her, but her act, she thought, would be enough for the commoners and nobles who knew her not at all save the legends and stories they had heard or imagined for themselves. She was to be the Holy Mother. She would bear the child. The child would save the world. She had to go through with it. Even if she found the man repugnant, she must put her life and her future in his plump hands and embrace a future of loneliness and misery. It was her duty. And it was time.